Hello, I'm Pastor Rod Holler of the Cape Baptist Church in Cape Coral, Florida. I hope this message will be a blessing to you. Thanks for listening.
2 Samuel chapter 2. Saul is dead. David is coming to the throne. But the path to the throne is not easy. David is cautious at this time. We've studied this. The men of Judah have welcomed him. When he came to Hebron, they have anointed him. He sends thanks to the men of Jabesh-Gilead for claiming the bodies that were hung on the wall at Bethshan and burying them. Great risk to themselves. In chapter 2, we see David going to Hebron. There he's anointed king. He encourages the men of Jabesh-Gilead. Abner makes Ishbosheth king of Israel and Mahanaim, a declaration of war, and civil war occurs in Israel. Tonight we're going to look at Joab's 12 men defeating Abner's 12 men. Asahel pursues Abner and Abner kills him. Joab and Abner call a truce and Asahel is buried in Bethlehem. Joab and his men, Abner and his men return to their respective hometowns. I must be honest that as you ponder certain passages in the Old Testament, you kind of look at it and go, okay, what's the point? So let's see, Asahel pursues Abner. Abner tells him, get away from me, in essence, and the third time he drives him through with the back end of his spear and kills him. They keep chasing Abner. Abner cries out for a truce. They say, okay, and they all go home. I mean, that's really in a nutshell. And I really, really, Lord, what are you saying? I mean, I've studied this, but when you really think about it, and many times what's not said is wherein the answer and the meaning lies. We'll have some fun with this tonight as we see Israel in the sad situation of civil war. What a waste. Let's start at verse 18 of chapter 2. And there were three sons of Zeruiah there, Joab and Abishai and Asahel, and Asahel was as light of foot as a wild roe. Now, to understand this, let's look at 1 Chronicles 2:15. This is talking about the family and the genealogy of David. Ozem the sixth, David, our David, is the seventh born son, whose sisters were Zeruiah. That's the one referenced in 2 Samuel. And the sons of Zeruiah, Abishai, Joab, and Asahel. So we have David's sister, Zeruiah, has three boys, hence his nephews. And they are with him. And we're going to hear more about Joab and Abishai through 2 Samuel. We've heard of Abishai in 1 Samuel. He was the one down in the valley when they came upon Saul sleeping at night. And Abishai said, let me kill him right here. David said, no, don't do that. You can't touch God's anointed and be guiltless. And they took the bolster and the spear. But that was Abishai. Now we see Joab on the scene. So these three nephews of David are now at this pool in Gibeon. They have got this confrontation with the men of Abner that support the house of Saul, as there is now a power struggle. Who's going to be king? Ishbosheth, one of the sons of Saul, or David, the one who is rightly entitled to the throne by God's plan? So, we have this young man, Asahel. Verse 19. And Asahel pursued after Abner, and in going, he turned not to the right hand nor to the left from following Abner. Then Abner looked behind him and said, art thou Asahel? He said, I am. Now somehow he knows him. I don't know how. God's silent on that. Believably simply because he is David's kin. But whatever, he knows him. They're apparently very close together that they can speak comfortably. They're in voice distance. And Abner said to him, turn thee aside to the right hand or to thy left, and lay thee hold on one of the young men. Take thee his armor. It sounds like Asahel is trying to get a trophy in the battle. He doesn't want just any trophy. He wants Abner. But Asahel would not turn aside from following him. And Abner said again to Asahel, "Turn thee aside from following me. Wherefore should I smite thee to the ground? How then should I hold up my face to Joab thy brother?" Howbeit he refused to turn aside, wherefore Abner, with the hinder end of his spear, smote him under the fifth rib, that the spear came out behind him. And he fell down there, and he died in the same place. It came to pass that as many came to the place where Asahel fell down and died, stood there. I can't explain it, but I can tell you one of the things that did puzzle me in this passage. Why is God silent on so many things, and he bothers to tell us it was below the fifth rib? Why did you give us that detail? I don't know. Was he pointing out the accuracy and the skill of Abner? Although the man has lost a lot of battles that he's been in, he let his commander, his king, die in battle. He's failed. He's fallen asleep so that David can come down while he's in the valley. He's dropped the ball a lot of times, but apparently within his own skills, he must have been quite a warrior. He wasn't just hot air. Asahel, don't do it. Don't do it. And the third time, he's got a spear through him. Dead on the spot. I wonder, as we think about this, did Asahel want to be like Uncle David who slew Goliath and became a national hero? I don't know. It doesn't say. But he didn't want just any armor as a trophy. He wanted Abner's. So we could read into it. God didn't say specifically. I like this quote. Asahel's swiftness, which he presumed so much upon, did him no service, but it hasted his end. He was surely light-footed as a young man, more nimble, quicker, more endurance, more balance, more agility. It must have been rough terrain. Abner, an older man, did not have that agility, and he was trying to get away, and Asahel would not turn. So it is, God had given him at that time the athleticism over Abner, but he didn't have the wisdom to use it properly. And surely now, as we've got the chaos of battle, Abner has now killed Asahel. He is laying there, and all of a sudden the people start to come by and they're looking, and the reality of war, they stop. Remember we saw last week that they set out to play? They're not playing anymore. This man's dead. He's got a hole through him. And they says they stood still. I mean, in the middle of battles, that's probably not a great thing to do, is it? But the reality of war came to them, and they're looking at the dead body of Asahel. And the awfulness became a reality. The ugly reality of war. A total of 20 men died on Joab's side. Joab apparently was the head, the organizer of this, and Joab returned from following Abner, verse 30. And Joab returned from following Abner when he had gathered all the people together. There lacked of David's service 19 men and Asahel. 20 men died. Well, now Joab and Abishai, they see that their brother Asahel is dead, so they begin the pursuit. Verse 24 of 2 Samuel 2. Joab also and Abishai pursued after Abner, and the sun went down when they were come to the hill of Ammah that lieth before Gaia by the way of the wilderness of Gibeon. So Abishai and Joab, the two remaining brothers, are now pursuing Abner. Verse 25, and the children of Benjamin gathered themselves together after Abner and became one troop, and they stood on the top of the hill. He was able to mount some kind of a stand, as in the chaos, as apparently they are retreating, and he organizes them on the top of this hill. Verse 26, then Abner called to Joab and said, "Shall the sword devour forever? Knowest thou not that it will be bitterness in the latter end? How long shall it be then, ere thou bid the people return from following thy brethren?" He calls for a truce based upon three reasons. Shall the sword devour forever? His second reason, knowest thou not that it will be bitterness in the latter end? And how long shall it be ere thou bid the people return? He never said Asahel's dead. Israel's in civil war. We just lost to the Philistines land all the way up to Bashan. What are we fighting for? He never said that. He never said, you know what, I'm sorry I made Ishbosheth king. So I think a lot of what is in this passage, the meaning in this passage, is what's not said. He doesn't care about the nation. He put up Ishbosheth because he knew he could bully him and boss him around. He was really the power of Israel. Here he is wanting this truth. He's the one that started this mess. He could have stopped it. Verse 27, and Joab said, as God liveth, unless thou had spoken, surely then in the morning the people had gone up, every one from following his brother. Following his brother. We are a nation at war. What is going on here? So Joab blew a trumpet, and all the people stood still and pursued after Israel no more. Neither fought they any more. And Abner and his men walked all that night through the plain and passed over Jordan and went through Bithron, and they came to Mahanaim. And Joab returned from following Abner, and when he had gathered all the people together, there lacked of David's servants 19 men in Asahel. 20 died. And then consider in verse 31, but the servants of David had smitten of Benjamin and Abner's men, so that 360 men died. 360. 360 to 20. Abner paid quite a price, him and his men. And then we have in verse 32, so they took up Asahel and buried him in the sepulcher of his father, which was in Bethlehem. And Joab and his men went all night, and they came to Hebron at the break of day. The one who could run like a deer was carried home, never to walk again. Asahel is mentioned here, but the 19 and the 360 that died are not mentioned. How many die in battle? What's not said is very powerful. These people gave their lives. I want you to get something else that's glaringly missing in this passage. Where's David? Where's prayer? Where's purpose? Why are they there? The power of this passage is what's not said. But is this not the way life seems so many times? We really don't understand the details going on behind things. We just see a chaotic mess. Why are they fighting over there? And they're fighting over there. And where's this guy? Why isn't he? And many times we don't understand. And then, of course, people die, known only but to God and their immediate families. And how many are lost, missing in action, and the terror that must be. What happened to my loved one? What are we to make of this? I wrote down questions. Where's David? Did he support this meeting? What was the purpose of the meeting? Why is there no prayer? Why is there no mention that the two sides negotiated about anything? How did they know to meet? Was this a chance? I don't think so. They could have captured Abner, but they let him go. Why? Killing or capturing Abner may have ended the whole thing immediately. And why was Asahel so focused on Abner? Was he given instructions? I don't think so, but we don't know. So hence, we've got a lot of unanswered questions here we can't read into Scripture. We must take it at face value. I think one of the most glaring things is there's no prayer. When David went forth to Goliath, it was against some uncircumcised Philistine that defied the God of the Israelites. But I don't see this. They're both serving, technically, the God of Israel. So who's going to go in the strength of the Lord? Both sides could claim it. Better both sides would have sat by that pool and negotiated and said, you're right, David's king, let's go home. But not to be. They were more concerned with who was in power than serving God and doing right. They were more concerned with who gets the credit than they do giving God glory and winning souls. The nation of Israel has just lost a decisive battle against the Philistines. The king died and his sons died. They lost land all the way up to Bashan. A tremendous amount of territory was lost. And Israel's killing each other. Does this sound like some churches today? This is not the time for Israel to fight over leadership. This is not the time to be killing each other. This is not the time for a power struggle. Not that any time's a good time. But the Philistines are at large. This is the time for seeking God and for His direction. But we don't see this by anybody. We don't see anybody pleading the cause of the Lord. And here we've got leaders that are God's people that are not leading the people in righteousness. Hence, people are dying, and this could have been prevented. Well, Abner surely does secure a truce with Joab, but a truce, a ceasefire, is not a lasting answer. He could have offered peace. Really get to the root of the matter. This is Christianity. I shouldn't have done it. I should not have put Ishbosheth up. I'm sorry. But he didn't. And men died. It could have been prevented. Now here's what's really sad. The sad thing really about this is Abner knows David was God's choice. Now chapter 3, obviously we're going to get a little ahead. We'll see this in very shortly in our study, not tonight. Ishbosheth, king, has a falling out with Abner. He accuses him of immorality. And Abner makes this interesting statement in his response. Abner says to Ishbosheth, chapter 3, verse 9, "So God do to Abner and more also, except as the Lord hath sworn to David, even so I do to him to translate the kingdom from the house of Saul and to set up the throne of David over Israel." He knew it. He knew in his heart God had chosen David. Now, if we were to go back and look through 1 Samuel, we would see the times. Samuel told Saul, "You're not going to be the king. God's going to choose a man after his own heart." We see other times. We saw it in Gedi. David said, "I know you're going to take this kingdom." I have to believe Abner was there. Abner knew it, and he did not stand up for what he knew was right. He wasn't concerned with the things of God, hence people suffered and died. It is not recorded many things in this passage, and this is what leads us to some of our interesting observations. God has remained silent on many things here. And is that not how our lives are today? Many times we look around and we just don't understand. We can ask God for wisdom, but things will go on around us and it's, "You know what, Lord? I have you leading me because I do not understand many things in this life." Surely David does not want civil war. He ran for how many years from Saul? Then, of course, the mess with the Philistines and the Amalekites. And he comes back to Hebron, and now the people are fighting. "Oh, that you folks would settle down and let me take the throne, that I can run this as God has called me to do." He knows that Israel's in bad shape, but he cannot easily step up to the plate. What's he supposed to do, amass an army and go wipe out people that he's supposed to lead? The answer is not that easy for David. What is he to do? And yet as we look at this, we really have to bring it up and learn some lessons for today. As Israel was God's people then, in that time, the church is God's people. Are we fighting each other? Are we in unity, or are we jealous who's going to be in the control? As they fought between Ishbosheth and David, are we going to be striving for positions and authority and leadership and who gets credit? Listen, the truth is you are going to find fault with things on this earth. No man is perfect. But God has chosen His leaders, and it is for us to accept this. Of all things, Israel is in dire need of leadership, direction, and correction. But what is David to do? He doesn't want to kill the people he's supposed to lead. So how do we respond when we have these situations? Do we start criticizing David? Why isn't he out here? What is he supposed to do? He put himself in harm's way. He could have been killed right there. Would he not have been a marked man? They wanted Ishbosheth. They were on Abner's side. He doesn't want to kill these people. Do we criticize? Do we pray? Do we contribute to a godly solution? Remember what David said in his eulogy to Saul, only one chapter earlier, chapter 1 of 2 Samuel, verse 20. When he learned of Saul's death and Jonathan's death, he said, "Tell it not in Gath, the hometown of Goliath. Publish it not in the streets of Ashkelon, another city of the Philistines, lest the daughters of the Philistines rejoice, lest the daughters of the uncircumcised triumph." And here they are. They just had a decisive victory over Israel, and now they're looking at Israel saying, "Look at those people fighting among themselves. And you call yourselves God's people. And this is how you act? Shame on us if we behave and the outsiders look in like the Philistines did and say, what is the matter with that church?" We must have unity, peace. Killing the people is not the answer. But through it all, God is working. Take a look at 2 Samuel 3:1. "Now there was a long war between the house of Saul and the house of David." This is only the beginning of the battles. But again, we don't get any detail of further of this, much of this war. "There was a long war between the house of Saul and the house of David, but David waxed stronger and stronger, and the house of Saul waxed weaker and weaker." It took time, but God was moving every day. David was getting a little stronger and a little stronger, coming into his own, and the house of Saul was coming down, as God foretold it would. David has stayed in Hebron. We will see that in our study very soon. And he's tending to his family. I want us to consider a little bit more about Abner. Abner is the leader, and his rebellion has cost many lives. Now, he knew that Asahel's death would bring tension between himself and Joab. Look what he said, 2 Samuel 2:22. "And Abner said again unto Asahel, Turn thee aside from following me. Wherefore should I smite thee to the ground? How then should I hold up my face to thy brother Joab?" You know, it's interesting. You don't care about me. You care about your relationship with my brother. Abner was not the sharpest knife in the drawer, I guess. He calls for a truce. He could have surrendered. The fighting was bad for everyone, and he knew it. Verse 26, "Shall the sword devour forever?" Listen, this is no good. Well, you're the guy that started it. You put up Ishbosheth. "Do you know not that it will be bitterness in the latter end?" Yes, you should not have put up Ishbosheth. But let's just everybody stop fighting. And just let's sweep this all under the carpet. And we won't really do with the root issue, but let's just all pretend it didn't happen. No, it's not going to go away. There's 380 dead men right here, and you've got a king, and you're supporting him, and you want us to all just call a truce and go away? No. Folks, you have to deal with issues, and this is not being dealt with. I don't see here Abner offering any change. People die. He admits it's a bad situation. Let's just stop fighting and go home. No, let's not just stop fighting and go home, Abner. You're wrong. But alas, what did Joab do? He just went home. They had him. They could have ended it. They didn't. Many people have needlessly suffered and died because of Abner's stubbornness. We don't have the reasons. We just see the facts before us. And so it is. People fight today. And it seems that God, like David in this passage, is not there. But yet surely David's presence was there. We don't know exactly. We're not told. But David cared for the people. God had given him a shepherd's heart, a man after his own heart. And surely, therefore, this had to grieve David greatly to know that Ishbosheth was set up and that he could not do what God wanted him to do. But God is there and God is working. And just like David, God does not rejoice when his people fight and there's strife. And we need to learn as a church from this sorry situation not to fight among each other. And then the world, like the Philistines, look at that church, look at them fighting each other, and they call themselves Christian. God grieves, for he is not willing that any should perish. 2 Peter 3:9. The Lord is not slack concerning his promises, some men count slackness, but is long-suffering toward us, not willing that any should perish. Oh, God is saying, Christians, let's just have unity and peace and just serve me. Follow my guidelines. Pray to me. I'll give you the blessings. I'll give you the direction. Because God wants us to do his work, to win souls, to glorify him. Let us lay aside our pride and accept God's will of humility and unity. Remember, 360 of Abner's men died, 20 of Joab's men died, and we know one name. Now, those soldiers there on that battlefield and the families that sent those young men, those husbands, those sons, those uncles to the battlefield, they knew who they were, but they're lost to history. We don't know who they are. This is how it is to all of us, folks. They fought for a cause. We want Ishbosheth. No, we want David. They were so passionate about it, they killed for it. And we don't know their name. Folks, God knows. Let's get passionate about the things of God. Don't worry about who gets the credit. Let's just be found faithful to what he wants us to do because he keeps the perfect record. Did you notice out in the front of this church there's a cornerstone that says 1990? Can you name one person that was here when that was set? I can't. This world's not going to remember us. 380 men died. We only know one of them. Folks, let's just give our lives to the Lord.
This is Pastor Rod Holler. I pray you enjoyed that message. Thanks for listening.